still collects audio from television. He's got a huge archive. He'll tell you about that in a minute. Now we're talking about CBS and some discoveries that Phil found, which sound very unique. I'm looking forward to hearing him too. So I give you Phil Greene.
Thank you. In 2011, in L.A., that was my last presentation. This is going to be my sixth. The first was back in 2001 in the U.K. when we actually were in London at the British Library. That was my first go-round. I got a call from a James Parton, an email, I should say. It was a couple of weeks before I was ready to fly to L.A., and he had found my name in a journal, the Ars Journal, and he was aware of the fact that my focus has been and is television audio air checks. And he mentioned to me that he came upon a cache of material that if I'm interested in, he would give to me. And I get calls all the time and emails, and usually they're dead ends. I thought this was well worth following up, which I did, and went to his home the night before the Ars presentation in 2011. And I was blown away. I was blown away at what he had and what I acquired. And what I acquired was, to me, a holy grail of television audio. It is very rare that one could find, much less really have archived, a whole day of television. Think about a whole day of television archived. What I had in front of me was one complete week of television. One complete week, 57 years ago, September 1st through September 7th, 1957. Sign on, 6 o'clock in the morning. Sign off, 2 a.m. in the morning. Starting with Sunday, the 1st of September, ending through the 7th of September, Saturday night. The last programming actually was Miss America, 1957. To give you an idea of what I was told by James, because I asked him, where'd you get these gray autograph discs? And you'll notice a few images there of a gray autograph. They're blue. They're 8.5 inches in diameter, and they were typically played on a gray autograph playback machine, recorder, and these were primarily used for dictation purposes, not for recording broadcasts, certainly, because it's very low fidelity, and you would not typically ever even think of recording on this medium. And the story goes like this. He in 2006, he went to a sellout in Burbank, California. The store, D.B. Cooper's Memorabilia Music Exchange. And they had been in existence since 1992. And they specialized in rare, out-of-print, hard-to-find records. They had, besides vinyl, they also had CDs, they had VHS, the whole gamut. And in a box, he discovered 137 gray autograph discs. They're 8.5 inch in diameter. And as you can see up there, I'll just give you one sample. They're blue. And instead of being cut, they're embossed. Very fine grooves here, and very easy to really not be able to play these back. Because if you played these back on a conventional phonograph or makeshift mechanism, you would all of a sudden, towards the middle and the end, you would be talking like this because it was a variable speed. However, the gray autograph was constant velocity, and it would adjust for the change in speed. It would initiate at the center of the record and go outward. In other words, the record is placed, and I have a gray autograph here, and we're going to listen at the end to an actual live presentation of one of these discs. We'll have other samplers in the PowerPoint. But what was interesting about this, it went from the inside to the edge of the record, and automatically got an adjustment with regard to the gray autograph, so the pitch was always right on. Very difficult to play these back if you don't have such an instrument, or if you do have the technical ability, you couldn't get the tone that's coming from there and program that tone, and it would adjust automatically. So I received these discs, and I had no clue to what these were. In fact, yeah, if we could, let's go to the shot of yours truly looking at the disc, Brandon, and you know, I get these. I never heard of gray autograph. I had no clue what these were, but I did realize that these were related to television. If there's another image, Brandon, where I have the date that was put on these records by, and now the rest is total assumption. Where did they come from? Why were they done? And who did them? I came to the conclusion, based on some research, that they were done by CBS. And remember now, this is 1957, and to date, there has never surfaced anything like this before or subsequent for 30 years, a consecutive run. Typically, as I think a lot of us know, networks, local stations, on occasion would record the programming, copyright issues possibly, whether a commercial was played in total, just to have a record of it. And the consensus is that CBS probably had these gray autograph recorders. It was used for certainly writing letters. You had secretaries using these. They were kind of ubiquitous at that time in the 50s. And they were also known to be very economic. And they weren't concerned with the quality of the sound, because I thought to myself, why not put this on reel-to-reel, even cut a disc? They used these, and certainly the fidelity is very low, as you will hear, and they did it basically to have it as a record. The total amount of hours run, approximately 130. There are 200 programs plus. They run the gamut. Give you some idea of some of the programs. Much of what is on is forgettable. There's no way I'm going to digitize, you know, Charlie Chan Goes to Shanghai. Every movie on here, every commercial, those are quite interesting. Many of these commercials, the product is no longer in existence, so that's very fascinating. And certainly the live shows, so much of this was live. Videotape Quad only came into existence literally October 31st, 1956, less than a year before these were done. And you still had mostly live presentations. Some of the shows, Farm Report. Now, how many people would love to have a copy of Farm Report from 57? You had some really rare soap operas, some of them non-existent. Hotel Cosmopolitan, Love of Life, Search for Tomorrow, Guiding Light, As the World Turns, which was the first 30-minute soap opera that just turned 30 minutes prior, about a half a year before 57 here. Walter Cronkite doing the news, which is cool. You had the Art Linkletter show. You had quiz shows like The Big Payoff, and on and on and on. Arthur Godfrey Time, Strike It Rich, and Douglas Edwards and the news, which is quite rare. And that was just your daytime programming. Then you had prime time. You had Sullivan Show, $64,000 challenge. You had What's My Line, which is kind of out there. But programs that are quite rare, like the Vic Damone show, et cetera. Those are very precious to me, and now we have a broadcast record of it. Granted, not high quality, but we have a record of it. One of the real rarities, and I think what we're going to do is we're going to go to the Dizzy Dean Game of the Week, CBS Game of the Week. Up until I received these discs, there has been no historic audio or video of Dizzy Dean doing the CBS Baseball Game of the Week. And here we're very fortunate that one of the programs, Saturday, September 7th, we have Dizzy Dean doing a complete game. He is so laid back, he's so country. So when I'm listening to this, I feel like I'm listening to a 1920 broadcast. It's so atypical from today's approach. And I'd like to play a little clip from that, if we could get to the Dizzy Dean slide where we have the disc and Dizzy Dean, and we can press the icon button for playback.
Keeps the ball low. And now to call the action for you. In the early going is the Dove Hunter from Arizona. Boy, he's looking great. Got a whole tub full of doves waiting for him tomorrow back in Phoenix. Here is the old rancher, Dizzy Dean.
Thank you, buddy, and howdy, baseball fans everywhere. Yes, sir, the ball game between the Cincinnati Redlegs and the St. Louis Cardinals here at Sportsman's Park in St. Louis. Von McDaniel out there taking his preliminary warm-up pitches, getting ready to start this ball game to his catcher, Landry. The first batter in there for Cincinnati is Temple. It's a real fine afternoon for baseball. Cool, somewhere around 60 to 70 degrees. Real fine weather. The wind is blowing across from left field to right. The Cincinnati Redlegs won a big ball game last night from the Cardinals as Milwaukee lost 5-4 to the Chicago Cubs. Well, the first pitch of the ball game will be on the way just in a second as the coaches, first and third, take their position, Frank McCormick and Jimmy Dice. The first pitch of the ball game is a fastball low for ball one. One ball and no strikes.
Cool. Just again to reiterate, the gray autograph was never meant to record radio, television, or any kind of broadcast record because of, obviously, a lower fidelity. It had many issues. I have a great ad over here, and this is typically the promotion for a gray autograph for any of the dictaphone machines. Edison had a version, and there was a sound scriber. Thank you, Michael. So you had this as a way of recording, especially in the 40s, late 40s, and 50s primarily, and just into the 60s. Here's an aired. Actually, the gray autograph pays you a profit, at least 200% each year, by saving household valuable time for you and your secretary, multiplying and increasing your accomplishments by getting more work done faster economically because of a combination feature unmatched by any other machine. The gray autograph records your dictation, telephone conversations, meetings, conferences, inventories, unbreakable, easy to file, mailable discs. They cost a few pennies, and these happen to be 30 minutes on a side. There were smaller versions earlier. The ones that I obtained here, these are 30 minutes per side. And again, I think to myself, why were these broadcasts, especially a week? I can imagine a few hours a day. Why a week, and why done on this machine? If we could go back to that slide where we have the dates. One of the interesting aspects of doing a little Columbo work here, and kind of obvious, on all these records, on all these discs, yeah, that one, a stamp date is indicated on each inner center of the blue autograph disc. And then you see 12, in this particular instance, 12 midnight to 12:30 a.m., 1 a.m. to 1:30. And initially I'm saying, what happened to 12:30 to 1? you know, where is it? And then I'm realizing that it's on another disc. And they were staggering discs, which indicated two machines were used, so one would not miss a single moment of the farm report. You know, you really didn't want to miss that. And this indicated to me that it had to be more than an individual. It had to be an effort, and I still feel CBS was responsible for this, in order to do this for seven consecutive days. You could not do this solo. You had to have a team. You had to go to sleep, and you wanted to make sure that everything was accomplished. So that led me to also investigate other people, like through Jane Klein at the Pelley Center, and David Schwartz. I was put in contact with other individuals, and they gave me their consensus as to what they thought. In most cases, nobody really had an answer. They didn't know, you know, the reason for it. They could only guess at it, and basically it ran the gamut. But they did all unanimously come to the conclusion and indicated how amazing this collection is, and how rare, and it's amazing that it just survived. Someone had to come into this music store, J.D. Cooper, between 92 and 206, with, I would assume, a lot of stuff. Maybe it was someone from NBC, maybe it was someone cleaning out a house, and this was part of what they brought in. Let's go to a few samples to indicate also some of the challenges that we have when playing back these gray autographs, if you are not playing it back on a constant velocity machine. By the way, leave that photo up there while we have it. The person on the left, he was the owner of D.B. Cooper, and then go to a photograph that you just had above him. No, the other way. And that basically is, you know, a feel for going into a store, still had tons of vinyl, trying to be able to, you know, buy some good deals with regard to the sellout. Let's go to the unpitched on this one. All right, good, cut. That's what you would get. That's what you would get if you weren't varying or repitching in terms of putting it on a conventional phonograph. So the fact that you have the gray autograph, which is constant velocity, or you are processing it later, let's go to the process part, and you have the exact same sound but correctly pitched.
This is Channel 2, KNXT, Los Angeles, owned and operated by the Columbia Broadcasting System. KNXT operates by authority of the Federal Communications Commission. KNXT is authorized to display the television seal of good practice as a subscriber in good standing.
We'll move on to a couple of other very interesting shows. Edge of Night, five of these during the week. Listen to a little of Edge of Night from 1957 on these gray autographs.
Hello.
Jack?
Now lay off, Sarah. You've said enough.
Wait a minute, Jack. Don't hang up.
Well?
I've only got a few minutes before I have to go to meet Mike, but I want to tell you that, well, Mother thinks that I said too much or didn't say it nicely enough.
Is there such a thing as sticking a knife in your own brother's back nicely?
If I made things worse by saying what I did, I'm sorry.
But you meant what you said.
Yes, I did.
Well, I meant what I said. I'm leaving Monticello. I'll never see it again. Or you, or Mother, or Betty Jean.
Don't run away, Jack.
I'm fed up with the...
Well, imagine what happens there. And another... This is a fabulous show, and we're lucky in a sense, because September 1 through 7 was the last week of reruns, typically, in a given season. And it's interesting why they picked that week. They, you know, you would have thought the next week maybe. And one can, you know, imagine exactly why it was the previous week. Well, the previous week also had a few premieres, and one of them was a fabulous show called The Verdict Is Yours. Reporter Jim McKay. It would be live. You would have lay people from the audience being the jury. You'd have a real judge. You'd have actors being the taking the defense and accused, and you'd have real lawyers. And it would go on until there was a resolution. 5 days a week, Jim McKay. Let's go to Jim McKay, and The Verdict Is Yours.
Speaking to you from the press room, one floor below the courtroom. However, I can see everything that's going on through my television monitor set here. And that's the way we'll refer to that from time to time. As for the case in this courtroom today, it is, speaking legally, a habeas corpus proceeding brought by George and Nora Myers to regain custody of 6-year-old Richard Cavanaugh. Now, Richie Cavanaugh has been living with the Myers for more than 5 years, ever since he was about 11 months old when his natural mother left him with them. However, just about a month ago, his natural mother suddenly returned and, in the absence of Mr. and Mrs. Myers, whom you're seeing right now, took her son, Richard Cavanaugh, back. He is now living with her and her second husband, Chris Newberry. There are the Myers, the people who want to regain the custody of 6-year-old Richard Cavanaugh. And now here comes the natural mother. This is Dorothy Cavanaugh Newberry. She has married again. That's her attorney, Abraham Harkavy. And there is Chris Newberry, her second husband. They have the child at the moment. They are the respondents in this case. The plaintiffs are the Myers. There is the jury. These are people like yourself. They've been selected from our audience, and at the end of the case, they will make
right.
their decision. Looks like court is just about going to be in session. Let's go inside and listen now.
This court is now in session.
Captain Kangaroo, 29 years on CBS, and here is one of his very earliest shows, Captain Kangaroo.
Planes get there very, very fast nowadays. When I was young, it wasn't too long before that when the Wright brothers were making the first airplane flight, just a little more than 50 years ago, and they didn't go too fast. They went a few miles an hour, and of course we went from airplanes like that to airplanes like this, and then to commercial airliners as we know them today that can travel a couple of 300 miles an hour, and that's pretty fast. But the jet age is upon us, and jets are the things that really do it faster now than man ever dreamed just a few years ago. And one of the men who flies them is Captain McCamish of the United States Air Force. And how are you this morning, Captain?
Just fine, Captain Kangaroo. Well,
it's so nice to have you with us.
Wonderful being here.
It's a real pleasure to have you.
You know, it's fascinating to listen to the whole show. I mean, really, it's early Bob Keeshan. Really terrific. Gary Moore, his last year doing the Daily Show. Let's go to Gary with his gang. It was Monday through Friday, daytime. Let's listen to a little Gary Moore just coming back from 6 weeks of vacation, which is so unusual. Letterman taking 6 weeks of vacation? No way. Wish I had an hour. We could hear more. One of the really unusual last hurrahs for the Gray Autograph was in 1963. It actually was recording in Dallas when Kennedy was shot, and it was getting a direct communication from the chief of police. All right, we'll cut that. It goes on, and you actually hear him say, let's get to the hospital, Parkland. Lastly, the tie-in with this and with me, I recorded Don Pardo's bulletins on NBC television. Nobody else ever did. And NBC never recorded those initial minutes and Pardo's initial bulletins. Let's take a listen. I also was called by NBC Nightly News this past November. They did their 50th anniversary show. The show leads in with my audio, Don Pardo, and I actually got, which is unheard of, a screen credit on NBC Nightly News right at the top.
By assassin's bullets in downtown Dallas. We'll repeat that. President Kennedy and Governor John Connally of Texas have been cut down by assassin's bullets in downtown Dallas.
Good day from Dallas, Texas. That voice you just heard from the first NBC News bulletin to air that day 50 years ago, the voice of Don Pardo, who was interrupting daytime programming to come on the air with the news from here, Dealey Plaza, Dallas, Texas.
The assassination of John F. Kennedy, 50 years later. This is NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, reporting to
you from Dallas. All right, I just want to thank those people who were instrumental in helping with regard to feedback for me. They are Steve Rogers, Russ Haynes, Dave Golden, Aaron Koh, Steve Smolian, and Seth Winner. And I appreciate all the feedback that I have gotten and also the attempts to do some of the conversion. No, I don't have any time. I brought in an actual, can I 30 seconds?
Why don't we do it after Dan?
Okay, because we have an actual gray autograph here that's operable. Yeah. So I thank you.
We should have a few minutes after.
Okay, thank you.